This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
It's that song. Jimmy Jones, remember him? Handyman? Fixing broken hearts and the like. Good morning, welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, I'm a heartbreaker. And along with my buddy, another heartbreaker, Big Ed Davis, we thank you for being with us. It is Friday, March the 25th. We are going to be talking in a few minutes with Annelle Scheline of the Quincy Institute. We're going to talk about the Saudi Arabian Yemen war. We don't think much of that, do we? We don't even know where the heck it is. We're going to talk about it because the Biden administration has failed, apparently, to deliver on its pledge to help end this war. It's been like 7 years. 7 years. So we'll talk about that with her. And we got a couple of things going on in Florida that may be cause for concern. We got those night curfews because of gun toters during spring break in Miami Beach. And also, there seems to be an environment of fear at Disney World. Apparently, a goodly number of employees think they're being censored, they're being watched. We're going to get some thoughts, we'll talk about it. Get some thoughts on it with the proprietor of the barber pole, guy that kind of keeps his eye on the way things are going in the state of Florida, Andrew Ceraci. And have you been watching those Supreme Court hearings with Ketanji Brown Jackson? Do you think she should be voted onto the Supreme Court? We're going to take a look. We're going to talk about it. Stay tuned for that. And we have a goodie in our Ultimate Top 10. On Wednesday, you might remember, we gave you the top 10 most dependable vehicles according to the latest J.D. Powers report. So turnabout being fair play. We shall give you the least top 10 dependable vehicles from J.D. Powers. All right. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored in part by Andrew's Master Barbershop. Guys, the best place to get a haircut, plain and simple, at a great price. It's easy to do. You're going to look so good. Is Andrew's Master Barbershop. It's in Dunedin in the Overcash Plaza. Now, call for your appointment first. 727-733-3773. Then get in your car or on your Cushman Golfer or in your green vehicle or your wind-powered vehicle and skedaddle down to State Road 580 Main Street and then go to Overcash Drive and go north on Overcash Drive and the first shopping plaza on your left, the Overcash Plaza. That's where he is. 727-733-3773. So Joe Biden is over there in Europe, in Brussels, and he takes a couple of questions from the press, and all of a sudden he gets his nose out of joint. One of the things he said is that he has said time and time again, that sanctions on Russia were never meant to deter him. Meaning Putin. Biden suggested yesterday that the sanctions they're putting on Russia were not meant to deter Putin, telling reporters that sanctions never deter. Of course they deter. And he said they deterred. His whole administration was saying the reason they were doing it was, Kamala Harris said, the reason we're putting sanctions on Russia is so that we deter them from any further invasion and war in the Ukraine. She said it outright. He says, a question was put, sir, deterrence did not work. What makes you think Vladimir Putin will alter course based on the action you've taken today? And he goes, let's get something straight. You remember if you covered me from the very beginning, I did not say that, in fact, the sanctions would deter him. Sanctions never deter. You keep talking about that. Sanctions never deter. You ask him the least uncomfortable question, and the guy explodes on you. Do you know how they treated Trump with their questions? How they attacked him? They basically verbally assaulted Donald Trump. This guy gets a couple of... And they say, you know, in a deferential way, they ask the question. The guy jumps all over people.
And this was over in Poland, right?
It was over in Brussels.
Brussels?
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, to his defense, the time zone is screwed up, so probably his nap time is way off.
Oh, I think
he
was
probably cranky. There was no morning nap or mid-morning nap or...
Yeah, I think, you got something there. You got something there. Maybe he should have taken a short siesta right there at the dais. You know?
Yeah.
Just kind of nod his head. But Kamala Harris, I mean, they're absolutely contradicting. Now, they're going to have to walk that back. As soon as the press secretary gets to the dais, the next time she gets to the dais, someone's going to say, well, Kamala Harris said that sanctions deter. And now Joe Biden said, I never said that sanctions deter. Kind of, does anybody know what's going on here in the House, right? It's very confusing. In the meantime, this sounds like some good news. Did you hear this, Ed? The Turkish president says that Russian President Putin and Ukrainian President Zelensky are nearing consensus on key issues to resolve the war. That would be good news, wouldn't it?
Yeah, what? I just wonder what they're going to have to give up.
That's exactly right.
And I'm all for that. You know, I think they may have to give up something now and then work diplomatically to try to eventually get Putin out.
As much as they would hate to do it, you're thinking about the eastern half of the Ukraine, aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
You know, the Turkey's been hosting these diplomatic talks. I don't think there's a lot of love between Zelensky of Ukraine and Putin of Russia.
Well,
also, yeah. I think that now that everybody concedes that Putin is a war criminal, there's going to be a price on his head.
And Zelensky right now is a rock star. I mean, for crying out loud.
He was a comedian.
Well, no, he's a rock star right now
yes,
to everybody in the country. I mean, the way he's standing up for, you know, he could have,
national hero.
Tucked his tail in like, what was the Afghanistani guy that took off before our military even took off.
Took off, right.
Yeah.
No, this guy's got guts. I get the impression the entire country's got guts.
Oh, sure they do.
I mean, the way that they stand their ground mm-hmm. and fight, it's like this monster bear has been hovering over them, a big shadow over the whole country for all of these years. And Ukraine, you know, Ukraine was between Germany and Russia. And if any country has suffered between the 20th century and now, if there was any country that's undergone long-term suffering, I think
it's Ukraine. I don't think they've ever let their guard down.
Right.
They're constantly living on alert status.
Exactly.
Being where they are.
I think you're right. Anyway, we are going to change wars. If I might say that, we're going to talk about this war that is going on between the Saudis and the country of Yemen. We're going to talk about it with Anel Sheline of the Quincy Institute.
For the sunshine sky, and there's a reason why I'm feeling so high, must be the season when that love light shines all around us.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcast Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Caregivers find the support they need on Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver. Heard every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m., Linda and her caring and knowledgeable guests will bring you education, information, and resources, as well as a shoulder for caregivers. That's Connecting Caregivers Radio with Linda Burhans, the gal who cares for the caregiver, where you can find help and hope every Friday from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back. Freedom Works. Thank you very much for being with us. And we are delighted to have Annelle Scheelein join us. She is a research fellow at the Quincy Institute. She focuses on Middle East religious authority. And boy, oh boy, if you talk about religious authority, go to the Middle East, boy, you see all kinds of religious authority. We're talking about, in fact, today is the 7th anniversary of the Saudi-Yemen war. A lot of people don't even know what's going on. Annelle, welcome to Freedom Works.
Thanks so much for having me.
Our pleasure. Could you, before we get into what the Biden administration is doing or not doing about the war, can you give us a little background on this war between the Saudis and Yemen?
Yes, so as you said, today marks 7 years since the Saudi-led intervention began. Prior to that, the Houthi rebels had taken control of the capital, which is then what precipitated the Saudis and other Arab coalition members to launch their war. And at the time, the Saudis said it was only going to take a few weeks, and the Obama administration agreed to support it. And yet, here we are, 7 years later, 400,000 Yemeni civilians are dead, no end in sight. And unfortunately, we're seeing the violence only escalate because the Biden administration has continued to provide additional support, although initially Biden had said he was going to end all U.S. support for these Saudi offensives.
Yes, he talked about that when he was running for office. Of course, he talked about a lot of things he was going to do. I remember him saying how Putin really feared him. Not so much these days. What was the deal between Yemen and Saudi? Why were they bickering and fighting? Does this go back thousands of years, or what is the history of that?
Well, the Saudi justification was that Iran was supporting the Houthi rebels. And what's sort of ironic is that 7 years ago, Iran had offered some support to the Houthis, but their support has only increased since then, and the Houthis have only gotten stronger. And so, unfortunately, what I fear is that the Houthis are going to continue to get even stronger over the course of the war that's likely to grind on for years. And we may end up having a situation similar to Afghanistan, where you have the Taliban, who, you know, many in Afghanistan did not want to be ruled by the Taliban, but in the end, they decided it was better to survive under this tyrannical Taliban rule than to continue to be killed by the U.S. occupation.
Okay.
And so similarly, in Yemen, people are going to say, look, I don't like the Houthis. They're really, you know, awful and quite similar to the Taliban in many ways in terms of their oppression of women, et cetera. But we'd rather survive under the Houthis than die as a result of the Saudi air war and blockade.
Right. So this was kind of a religious thing, another one of these secular, religious factions going at it in Yemen?
No, I would not characterize this as really going back to religion.
Okay.
I think it has a lot more to do with just the geopolitical struggle between Iran and Saudi Arabia, both of them trying to assert dominance.
Got it. So, here's Biden promising he was going to help end the war. It's getting worse, right? What was he going to do? What should he do, and what is he doing that is, let's say, prolonging things?
Well, he said he was going to end all U.S. support for offensive military actions, which sounded good. Unfortunately, he never defined what exactly offensive meant, and so actually the Biden administration has authorized over $1 billion in new weapons sales to the Saudis over the past year, including things like attack helicopters, which sound very much like an offensive sort of weapon. And furthermore, by helping the Saudis defend themselves, it does allow them to then attack Yemen with greater impunity. Your listeners may remember there was a Houthi attack on Abu Dhabi back in January, and after that, the U.S. sent the USS Cole, as well as fifth-generation fighter planes to help support the UAE here. And the Biden administration narrative is that the Houthis pose this huge threat to the Saudis and Emiratis, when in fact, with U.S. assistance, 90% of Houthi transborder attacks are successfully blocked. And you know, civilian casualties remain quite low in Saudi Arabia, and only 3 people unfortunately died in Abu Dhabi. Whereas in Yemen, again, we're looking at hundreds of thousands of people killed by this war and by this air assault.
Yeah, it's terrible. I think you mentioned 400,000 people. I mean, this is like whatever the word is for getting totally rid of a country the way they're going there.
Well, it's quite similar to what Russia is doing to Ukraine.
Yeah.
You know, this much more powerful and wealthier neighbor that just is wreaking havoc on the civilian population. And essentially, it's a policy of collective punishment. I think the Saudis are trying to get the Yemenis to overthrow the Houthis. But, you know, similar to what we're seeing in Ukraine, the Ukrainians are rallying in favor. And, you know, even Russian-speaking Ukrainians who might have initially had some doubts about Zelensky or, you know, maybe had some Russian sympathies, are now saying, well, no, you know, Putin, you're attacking my country. I'm going to support
my
fellow Ukrainians.
We're talking with Anel Schielein. She is the research fellow at the Quincy Institute, focusing on Middle East religious authority. So Saudi Arabia, I don't think they're taking Joe Biden's calls recently. Now that we're looking for a place to get oil, because we're shutting down, as you know, the import of Russian energy, I understand that he was trying to make a call over to Saudi Arabia to set up some sort of a deal, but they're not taking this call. So if we or the United States has been like supplying so-called defensive weapons over there, and Saudis, what's going on with all of that?
Right. It's really astonishing that both Saudi Arabia and the UAE are clearly siding with Russia here. They do not want to burn their bridges with Russia over Ukraine. And I think part of this has to do with the fact that they see Putin as a better future ally for them, because they saw what Putin did in Syria. They saw him murdering Syrian civilians to keep Bashar al-Assad in power, and they know that the United States would not do that. They saw what happened during the Arab Spring, that the U.S. was not going to come in and murder Egyptians, for example, to keep Hosni Mubarak in power. And so they see Putin as a better ally.
Yeah.
So moving forward, they know, you know, Congress is starting, to a certain extent, exert itself a bit more on weapon sales to the Saudis. They know that it takes a while for American weapon sales to go through, whereas neither the Russians nor the Chinese will have such compunctions about selling them weapons. And this is part of why the Biden administration is behaving this way, because they worry about losing our Arab security partners like the Saudis to Russia and China. But I would say the U.S. is no longer dependent on Saudi oil. We only import 7% of our oil from Saudi Arabia. And why are we bending over backwards to continue?
Yeah, this is an unholy alliance.
Their war.
This is an unholy alliance this is almost like a snake, Saudi Arabia. Then we got this thing going, we're going to allow the sale of whatever they call that nuclear waste or whatever it is that Iran's got or Russia's got. They got a deal going between Russia and Iran. That's another thing. Did you hear about that?
Yes, this is part of why we saw Russia essentially trying to prevent the Iran nuclear deal from coming back online. And part of this had to do with the fact that Russia was going to take some of the excess nuclear material that, you know, Iran needed to get rid of as part of the deal. And Russia was saying, we aren't going to take it. And so that threatened to derail the deal. Now we've heard that that seems to have been addressed and perhaps the nuclear deal will go forward, which I do just want to say is the nuclear deal was the only thing that ever constrained Iran's nuclear program. So I think it is very important. We are even hearing senior Israeli former officials saying that Netanyahu pushing Trump to get out of the deal was one of the dumbest strategic things that Israel has ever done, because the threat from Iran's nuclear program is much worse now than it was when the deal was in place.
Yeah. So now you've been involved with Middle East activities, political, religious, for quite some time. Have you overall, and I'm going to include Russia and, you know, expanded, have you ever seen things so tense, so scary as they seem to be right at this moment?
Well, we've never been at a risk of possible, you know, World War III with nukes in my lifetime. You know, this possibility that the U.S. might, in fact, escalate, and that I think a lot of Americans don't quite appreciate what it is to be fighting, what it would mean to fight an adversary like Russia. You know, since the end of the Cold War, the United States has not had to deal with any peer competitor. You know, we've gone after terrorists hiding in caves that don't have an air force and certainly don't have nuclear weapons. And I think Americans are just sort of accustomed to fighting that sort of a war where we can just, you know, drone and obliterate our enemies willy-nilly and take relatively few casualties in return. Whereas if the United States were, in fact, to escalate against Russia, we would face Armageddon.
Yeah, it's very, very scary. We have no taste for war in this country. We've gone through many generations of people that, quite frankly, since the Vietnam War, right, have not experienced the concept of losing a lot of American people in a war. But we're now talking about the possibility that it could occur. And then you've got, I mean, when we look, if we could again, on this Ukraine thing, watching an entire country being ground into dust, and we're sort of sitting back. Let me just put it this question to you. Do you think Joe Biden is the right guy at the right time in the White House for all the things that seem to be going on at once?
Well, I think Biden has actually done a really good job of trying to push back against some of the hawkishness. I mean, it's understandable that people are reacting to these images of, you know, Ukrainian refugees. But from my perspective, it's somewhat frustrating just knowing the devastation of the populations of Syria, of Libya,
right,
of Yemen, of Iraq, of Afghanistan. And you have commentators on the news saying things like, oh, this is the first war to ever take place on social media. And it's like, no. There have been wars and documented.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah, happening all over the Middle East for years, but you weren't paying attention.
A good point.
Because they're Arabs, or, you know, they're brown people.
Yeah, exactly.
Happening to white people. And suddenly everyone's like, wow, we've never seen this happen before.
And you know that you can see a lot of people, especially those in our country that are of that are minorities, have brought that up. You know, European white people, and everybody gets excited about it. But then you got all these things in the Middle East. Look at Africa. Look what's been going on there for many, many years. And we don't seem to be as concerned about it. The press doesn't cover it as much. And you're right.
Exactly.
I mean, when you mentioned the Yemen war, most people wouldn't even know where it is. They wouldn't know where Yemen is. They wouldn't know anything about what you just talked about. And they wouldn't know... go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, just to make one point here, you know, it is understandable that people are feeling really awful about what's happening in Ukraine. You know, the media has been giving it so much attention. And so it's understandable people are feeling bad, which is why I think it's great that the administration announced they're going to take 100,000 Ukrainian refugees, which they should have been doing earlier for other refugees as well, but I'm glad it's at least happening now. But one thing that people can do is call their member of Congress and tell them to support a Yemen War Powers Resolution, which would end U.S. support for what the Saudis are doing to Yemen. This actually passed successfully back in 2019, but Trump vetoed it because he was a big friend of the Saudis. And members of Congress have committed to reintroducing it now and trying to get it passed.
I think they'd get bipartisan support for that, wouldn't they? With all the other things?
Well, as you say, people don't know that it's happening. They've bought into this narrative of the Biden administration saying they've ended support, which is just inaccurate. And so it's really crucial because I think members of Congress don't think Americans care about this. But in fact, if the U.S. were to withdraw support for Saudi Arabia, their air force could no longer function. They would be forced to stop this assault on Yemen.
There you go. Maybe it's a good thing. Well, thank you so much, Anel, for coming on and talking with us. I hope we can revisit and talk again down the road. Thank you.
I hope so. Thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Anel Schielein from the Quincy Institute. Okay. We're going to take our break. And when we come back, we got two things going on here in Florida. First of all, we got this curfew at night, of all things, in Miami Beach with spring breakers and gun shooting. Secondly, we've got apparently a goodly number of Walt Disney employees that are very upset and somewhat scared about this new woke philosophy at Disney World.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Hey, Tantalk listeners, Senior Voice America is here. Learn what's affecting Bay Area seniors. From political to financial and health to wealth, it's right here every Monday afternoon at 4 o'clock. Your hosts, political commentator Tim Rice and financial expert Berkeley Badger, will bring current, thought-provoking subject material while taking your calls. Senior Voice America Radio, 42 years of service to mature adults and a proud member of the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back on a Friday. And delighted to have the master barber with us, Andrew Ceresi. And Andrew, I thought we'd talk about a couple of things that are going on. Let's start off with this thing that's going on in Walt Disney World. The Walt Disney Company, I know you go there all the time. A group of anonymous employees have spoken out in an open letter warning the company not to take political stances that alienate some of the workers and parts of the Disney audience. In other words, they're getting more woke at Disney World, and it's scaring a lot of these employees. What do you think?
Well, Paul, woke companies go broke.
Woke go broke?
Woke go broke. You got it right.
I think that's a good phrase. You think it'd take a long time for Disney World to go broke, wouldn't it?
Not really, Paul. Their expenses got to be pretty big.
That's true.
You know, when Disney World first opened up, it was around 73 or something. I remember I went there, and I think it was like $18 to get in for the day.
Yeah, right.
I mean,
it's a different world.
Is it $100 and something?
Oh, at least.
First of all, you got a woke CEO. These woke CEOs got to go. First of all, keep your political views to yourself.
Exactly.
We aren't listening to you. You know, I mean, how many employees do you have there that are woke or LGBT or whatever? You know?
Well, and they've got some. They do, and it's
okay. And there's nothing wrong.
Nothing wrong with it. You know.
Right, but. You don't sit here and favor the one.
Well, you don't bring it up. These are kids you're catering to. That's the thing about it.
That's right. Okay, Walt Disney's doing cartwheels in his grave, Paul.
Yeah, I think he is too.
Simple. Coca-Cola, they're going down. People are drinking everything. But these companies that make their voices appear, that they're going to be woke, this and that. I got news for you. They're appeasing to what? 5% of the country, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Here's part of what the employees as a group wrote about this. The Walt Disney Company has come to be an increasingly uncomfortable place to work for those of us whose political and religious views are not explicitly progressive. We watch quietly as our beliefs come under attack from our own employer, and we frequently see those who share our opinions condemned as villains by our own leadership. I mean, that's pretty scary. Paul, jeez.
Disney put gay characters in children's cartoons. You know, I mean, why do you have to push this on people? If you want to be gay, that's fine. Do what you want to do. There's nobody stopping you here. But you aren't going to force me to think that everything is okay. I mean, I do not care what you do.
Yeah.
Do you understand that? I do not care. Yeah. You shouldn't care what I do.
I always worried about Peter Pan. I thought maybe with all the boys.
Here you go. We always that. But you know, yeah. You know, Paul,
yeah.
It's not going to work, okay? The country's okay. Getting wise to what's going on. You know, it's just like, you know, I'm involved in the local politics.
Yes, you are.
Here, and I'm watching these candidates very hard in District 13. And I'm watching them, and you know, nobody says what they're going to do. They all sit there, who's taking a picture? I'm at a gun range shooting a gun. I believe in the Second Amendment. I'm here giving a speech. I believe in free speech. I want to know, what are you going to do? You know what I'm saying?
I do. And
District 13 has a lot of problems, and nobody talks about them. For one so far.
Yes. Well, for those of our listeners that don't know, District 13 encompasses the St. Petersburg, Florida area, and parts of Pinellas County, including apparently where we are in the Clearwater area, too, right?
That's it. I mean, I'm very concerned about politics in Florida. I live here.
And Charlie Crist has been the congressman from this District 13.
Oh.
He's going to be running for governor against our buddy Ron DeSantis, which we think is going to be a losing battle. But he's vacating his District 13 chair. And go ahead, Andrew. Who do you like in District 13?
Paul, I've been watching him. I've seen some of the candidates have been trying to get in there since the last election. I mean, Anna Paulina lost, I believe she got 26% of the election against Charlie Crist, which is understandable. Charlie was big there. But the fact of the matter is, Paul, everybody says what they think they're doing. I'm taking donations for Ukraine. Look at me. I'm at a gun range. Look at me. The only one talks about what's going to happen is Kevin. And you know,
Kevin who?
Realize, Kevin Haslett.
Kevin Haslett, right.
Okay, Anna Paulina Luna, which is not her real name. I forgot what her real name is. So she goes by an alias name. She moved here from California purposely to try and get into politics into District 13.
Now, she's a Republican. She's a Republican candidate.
Republican. Right.
Okay.
She's not even from here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The same thing with Amanda Mackey. Amanda Mackey was a lobbyist in Washington. She worked for Lisa Murkowski, the Alaskan senator who goes constantly against the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. Okay, and there's another woman, Christine Quinn. Well, she's a nice lady, very soft-spoken. We're not going to win that seat with these candidates. We have got to win this seat. Okay.
I'm asking, but I know some of the answers. We had him on.
Has been here for 55 years. Grew up right in Clearwater. He knows what goes on around here. He knows the area. He's an intelligent. I'm not going to say a man because all the others are women. And I don't want. He's the person for the job.
Right. Yeah. And if people knew you, they know that gender had nothing to do with who you like. Go ahead.
No, I want somebody in there that's going to take care of this state, that is going to go along with our governor and not fight him. Kevin, if you put Kevin, and what I'm really trying to do is to nail Charlie Crist at a cross between Kevin and Ron DeSantis. Because Charlie Crist is going for the governorship against Ron DeSantis, and Kevin Haslett is going for Charlie Crist's old seat.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you something. The last thing I would want to be involved with would be a tag team match against Governor DeSantis and Kevin Haslett.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right.
These two guys could bring the truth out of what's going on. Kevin can tell you what he wants to do with this. And nobody talks about the crime in St. Petersburg. Except I believe in the Second Amendment. You better have a gun. you know?
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Let's talk about what's going on here. You're going to see as time goes on that what Kevin talks about, what he proposes. And here's a man who's very successful in life, okay? And his reason for running is, you know, I want to give back. He goes, I don't want to be a career politician. I can give 2, 4, maybe 6 years into giving back. And I feel I can really make a difference in District 13 and in Florida mm-hmm. with what's going on in our state. This is why I'm backing this person.
Yeah. Well, you make good points. I want to bring one other topic up that I teased our listeners with at the beginning of the show. And that is what's going on in Miami Beach right now. At least 100 people have been arrested in the past 5 weeks during the spring break that they've been going through. 5 people injured, guns all over the place. Now, we've had trouble before, but it seems like it's getting worse down there. They got a night curfew. My God. Can you imagine going down there if you were a kid from college, spring break, and you were told you can't go out at night? What?
I got one answer for you.
Yeah.
Democrat. Miami's a Democrat-run area, district, right?
This is Miami Beach, but I think so.
Okay, it's Democrat.
So it's just simply it's a Democrat.
What more do I need to say?
Well, I'm trying to...
You know, they take back on the police power.
Okay, they're more tolerant. Yeah, go ahead.
Right, they're more tolerant of crime. Mess around with the Pinello Sheriff over here and see what happens. Mess around with Grady Judge and see what happens. You go down to Miami, they'll let you out for this. They are not the same breed, Paul. It's run by Democrats. And this is what happens in every Democrat city. Look at the statistics.
Yeah.
Look at New York City. Look at Chicago. You think Miami's in it? It's getting the same
way. Oh, no. You're right. Of course it is. No, it's horrible.
The same way.
Yeah.
And why? There's only one answer. It is Democrat run.
Yeah. In fact, we're going to be down the road. We're going to be talking about how many of these cities that normally you would think would be places people would want to live are losing people. San Francisco, by the way, which has become so woke, it's actually draining residents. They can't take it anymore. This has been going on, of course, in New York for a while. You know, places that normally we would want to go to see and spend some time in. And the same thing with Miami Beach. But then when you've got all of that stuff going on, you're driving away people that'll spend money there, legitimate, good people, and then you have all of this occur.
You know, Paul, another thing I want to bring up, I don't know if you were familiar with this one. The other day there was a 73-year-old lady that got carjacked by 4 teenagers. She ended up getting killed. Her arm got tangled in the seatbelt and pulled her arm right off of her.
Oh, God.
These 3 teenagers from 14 to 17, Paul. And you know why this is happening with our kids today? The word respect has not been pounded into them.
Mm-hmm.
They get away with everything.
They come from dysfunctional families, don't they?
They come from, that I can't answer you. But I would.
I'll almost guarantee you.
They do.
I'll almost guarantee you. That it starts at the nuclear family is the breakup of the nuclear family. You have these resentful kids wandering around who probably don't find that they've been loved. I mean, I'm not trying to be a psychiatrist. There's bad people in good families. But to do this kind of a thing, they have to have a lot of hate in their...
You know, Paul, when you say they weren't loved, I knew I was loved by my parents, but I can tell you this, I got my rear end beat because they loved me so much.
Well, exactly, but
okay.
But you appreciate that even more today.
Well, Paul, I was taught respect. I would respect elderly people. I always have, even as a kid. Today, these kids will see an elderly person hardly walking, trying to get across the street, and they'll run by him and bump into him purposely.
Oh, yeah, they'll push him off subway platforms.
You know what I'm saying?
They'll push him down stairways. I've seen all kinds of horrible things that they're doing to elderly people.
This is why I said the other day, they need to bring back the draft. And don't even call it the draft. The minute everybody's out of high school, no college deferments, no nothing. You're 18 years old, you're going to serve 2 mm-hmm. years for your country. I don't care if it's planting trees in a park, but the discipline in the armed services will teach them respect and what a little bit life is about. And they need to bring this back in. But look at Israel, they do it.
Look at
how that country is run.
I tend to agree with what you're saying. I tend to agree with it. Even if you want to go to college, you can say, look, You're going to serve 2 years doing something for your country, and here are the choices that you have, and then you'll have that opportunity. They'll respect both their college experience even more when they go out in the real world and serve.
And you know what, Paul? They won't have to worry about a student loan.
That's another thing.
They can go to college with the VA, right?
Well, I think that there could be something worked out there, yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. You can kill two birds with one stone. But they need to bring this back. They need to quit treating these kids and this generation like a bunch of little wusses.
Yeah.
That's not working. Look at it. Look out your window.
No, I think you're right. You're always right, Andrew. Well, most of the time. You're not always
just
right.
Like, just like I believe they need to have dress codes in the schools.
I agree with that one, too.
Everybody
absolutely
looks the same.
I agree with that. There's a discipline.
Why don't they do this?
I know.
They have to grow up as an individual. Well, look at your individuals. They grew up real well, didn't they?
You know, in the long run, children want to be disciplined deep down. They want to be kind of set straight. They want it. They might not at the moment think about it. It's not in the short term, they don't, but long term, they do. And they do look back at it, and they do want their parents to discipline them. And they do, I think, they do want to look presentable in school with, you know, and I agree with the uniforms. The decorum sometimes makes you perform better. It's like when you put a suit on. There's something about putting a suit on with suit and tie and the whole bit. And less people are doing it these days, by the way. But you comport yourself better just because you got that on.
Well, we got to start working to bring in the draft back, I guess,
yeah.
Paul. That's the only thing that's going to change these young kids today. Get them out there with Smokey the Bear at 5 o'clock in the morning and see what it's all about.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Hey, by the way, I checked on the Miami situation with the police this last year. They've been going through, get a load of this. They've been eliminating a lot of jobs in the Miami Police Department, including second in command, all because they were, you got it, defunded. Positions were eliminated. Now this is the backlash. Almost a year later, that they just don't have the staff.
Yeah, that's right.
And if you want to turn around, Andrew brought up St. Petersburg, Mayor Kreisman, who just left. He defunded the police, too. He defunded the St. Pete police by not allowing them to hire the amount of officers that they hired every year. He cut that back.
Again, it goes back to one word, doesn't it? Democrat. Period.
Yeah. You would think in the long run the Democratic base would turn on the Democrats for doing that because they are the ones that suffer the most. Their neighborhoods get it, you know? Get all the trouble.
You think they would smarten up, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They sit there, but the Democrats keep promising them, hey, we're going to give you this. We're going to give you this. The only thing they're giving them is trouble and heartaches.
I think you're right. Yep. Andrew, you always set us straight when you come on the show. I really appreciate that, my friend. Thank you so very much, and I look forward to our chat on Monday.
You got it, Paul. Have a good weekend.
And the same to you, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. The Master Barber, nobody like him. He's totally individual, one of a kind. All right, we're going to take our final break, and when we come back, should Ketanji Brown Jackson be voted onto the Supreme Court?
Please don't talk about love tonight. Please don't talk about sweet love.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Guys, a well-groomed appearance is the first thing people will notice about you after a stop at the best barbershop in Tampa Bay. Andrew's Master Barbershop in Dunedin is that very place, and they've specialized in the art of men's haircutting for decades. They're located in the Overcash Plaza, just north of State Road 580 Main Street on Overcash Drive. Andrew's Master Barbershop, open Tuesday through Saturday. Just call for your appointment, 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773. Andrew's Master Barbershop.
Hey, did you know there's a live psychology talk show Thursday and Friday at noon where you can call in and get free guidance and also learn several different topics relating to ending the stigma on mental health? It's called Moments of Clarity on WTAN 1340 AM. It's with licensed therapist Tiffany Warner, who will try to end the stigma on mental health. But the only way you can do that is to listen to Moments of Clarity Thursday and Friday at noon on WTAN 1340 AM, the Tan Talk Radio Network.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back for the final segment of Freedom Works, and we thank you so very much for being with us. By the way, we are here Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Great Tan Talk Radio Network, and we're delighted you're listening to us, but if you can't listen, you know, maybe 10 o'clock you're doing stuff, thanks to Big Ed, you can go and listen to our show on podcast. He puts all our shows on podcast. All you got to do is go to our website, OurFreedomWorks.com, O-U-R, OurFreedomWorks.com, and look at the top of the website. You'll see the word podcast. Click on it, and away you go. All right, so I want to talk a little bit about Ketanji Brown Jackson. She is Joe Biden's pick to go on to the Supreme Court, replacing Stephen Breyer, who is a liberal, and she is a liberal. And they basically concluded the discussions, and I have lost my, where the heck did I put the story, the sheet on her? She's here somewhere. I know I have it. But anyway, yesterday they spent time, not with her, but with people, Republicans and Democrats, both sides of the aisle, sitting down and either recommending that she be placed on the Supreme Court or stating that they didn't think she would be a good candidate. So, now they're going to, I guess, they're going to, she's going to make the rounds, and here we go. Here's one of the stories on her, by the way. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Minority Leader, I should say, Republican Minority Leader from Kentucky, he said yesterday that he will not vote for Ketanji Brown Jackson. He was sort of on the fence at the time, but he said, after studying her record, watching her performance this week, I cannot and will not support her for a lifetime appointment. She's been accused of being too soft on kids, adults that use pornographic materials of minors, whether they distribute them or they view them or have them in their possession. There's a penalty for that. You just don't do that with kids. And for whatever reason, she has virtually always gone under the penalties recommended by the government for these people. So that's a big issue. I don't even know why she's like that. You would think somebody like her would understand how children should not be exploited like that. But she never directly, I think, put that one to rest. You know, her issue with the kids and the low. I mean, why is she doing that? Is it because a lot of these people are possibly, for whatever reason, more aligned with the liberal side of the situation politically? I don't know. But it just seems to be in her nature. She was also asked, how do you define a woman? She didn't want to answer that one, apparently. These days, it is kind of tough, you know, if you think about it.
Real quickly, that what you brought up Wednesday about the transgender woman that beat the woman in the swimming thing.
Yep.
I had never seen a picture of that dude or whatever.
She looks more male than I do, for God's sake.
I thought it was a joke. I thought it was something like you see on late night TV or something like that. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it looks like a guy. It is a guy. Yeah, I mean, that's another thing, you know. But that one's going to, I, you know, the women's, you know, here's the thing with Democrats. They got women that they try to cater to. Well, women aren't putting up with this, real women, biological women. They're not going to put up with that. If you're having transgenders taking over all of the different women's sports, we're going to do that in basketball too? In the WNBA, we're going to, you know, tennis? I mean, come on, man. Mm. Oh, well. Hey, before we do our top 10, I just got to mention this. I know you don't care about college basketball. Did you know the number one seed in the entire tournament was beaten last night?
I briefly saw that in the sports page.
Yeah.
I just breezed over. I just went, ha-ha. All those people lost their money.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did, indeed. All right. It is time for our top 10. And last time, Wednesday, we gave you the J.D. Powers top 10 most dependable vehicles in their 2022 study. Now, these vehicles actually are 2019 models because they had to give the owners some time to fully assess dependability. Mm-hmm. Okay? So we're talking about 2019 vehicles. But here we go. Least dependable vehicles. Number 10. This one surprised me a little bit. The Infiniti. I thought they were well made, but apparently not. They have problems per 100 vehicles, and the Infiniti has 228 problems per 100 vehicles, okay? Number 9. Another one that used to be pretty reliable, the Honda. The Honda, 230 problems per 100 vehicles. Number 8. Another one, Audi. I always thought the Audis were dependable.
Is it Audi or Audi?
None of your business. It's what I say it is. I guess it is Audi, actually. What did I say? Audi?
Yeah.
Audi! Howdy! It's an Audi! Anyway, 232 problems for 100 vehicles. Number 7, the Jaguar. I used to call them Jaguars, but they, if you listen to these British commercials,
I knew somebody had
the Jaguar.
The Jaguar was always broken down.
Really?
Always.
Well, they're a luxury car.
Good luck getting parts for it.
That's true. That's a British car, isn't it?
Yeah, very British.
Very British. Number 6, Chrysler. Good old Chrysler, poor old Chrysler. 240 problems for 100 vehicles. Wow. Number 5, another used to be dependable, Acura, which is a Honda, but they've developed their own identity. 244 problems per 100 vehicles. Number 4, Alfa Romeo. That's an Italian car, isn't it?
Yeah.
245 problems per 100 vehicles. Number 3, another dependable car at one time was the Volvo. I wonder why these cars are becoming less dependable.
Volvo used to be very, very dependable. I mean, you could put a million miles on a Volvo.
Yes, you could. And also, they were supposed to be a good family car. Anyway, 256 problems for 100 vehicles. Number 2, the Ram. I guess that's the Dodge Ram truck.
Yeah, wow.
266 per 100 vehicles. Okay, Ed, what do you think? I'll tell you this. It's like a Ram.
Durango? I don't know.
It's a good guess. Land Rover.
Land Rover.
The Land Rover, 284 problems per 100 vehicles. Vehicles. Wow. That's J.D. Powers talking. Hey, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it. We are going to be back on Monday, same time, same channel. In the meantime, remember, freedom works.
You got me looking at that heaven in your eyes. I was chasing your direction. I was telling you.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDC.